Well, good morning, everyone. So the Bible I'm using is quite large. And physically, it's quite large, quite heavy. And despite the fact that it's quite large, it's also got very fine print in it. And, you know, I'm still, sometimes I have to pull out my glasses, but still, it's big enough that you can read, you can still read it, but there is a lot of, it is a fairly small, the font is fairly small. There's a lot of information. Because of the size, because of the small font, this book is filled with information. There is a lot in this book. Having all that information, all that detail is great in some cases, because it's kind of interesting. You can begin by looking at a topic, and as you get into it, you learn, you discover more and more, and it becomes enjoyable to be looking at one simple thing. You see all these different layers. It's like, you know, the proverbial onion. You peel back one layer, and there's something fresh that you can learn from it. When our brother Bill was here, he made a comment, and that whatever book he studied, that was his favorite book, and I share that sentiment with him, and I laugh when he mentioned that one, because that's essentially my feeling as well. But really, when we look at it, there's lots here, but there's also a bit of a catch to that, downside to that. We can end up focusing on the details, focus on the unimportant things. Well, not unimportant, but the minor things, and lose the message. The Mosaic Law contains 613 commandments, 613 rules that have to be followed. 365 are expressed in negative terms. Thou shalt not do this. 248 are said in a positive way. You shall do this. 615 commandments. That's a lot to remember. You figure most people couldn't read, or you know, were really, you know, they could speak, but they probably couldn't read or write. And so for the common person, so for a scholar, it would take them years to learn all the commandments. And for someone, a common person who may not have been able to read or write, it could take a lifetime to learn all these different rules, to learn all of the minor details. We're often hard on the, when we look at the ancient Israelites. But when you think, yes, there's 613 minor rules with minor details, each one of them, it's a lot. In the Bible, there are a little over 3,200 people mentioned by name. There's just less than half of them are unique names. So 1,443 have unique names. And of the 3,000 people in the Bible, there's not a lot mentioned about a lot of them. But the fact that, you know, if you're trying to study, well, you have only 1,400 people, you know, more than half of the people, there's multiple references. So if you're looking up Zechariah, well, which one of the 31 characters mentioned named Zechariah you're looking up? And are you sure you're looking up the right person? And are the people you're looking at, did they make, what contribution did they make? We've got 39 kings in the kingdom. Most of them were evil. All the kings of Israel were evil. Most of the kings of Judah were evil. Do you know which ones? Should you know? Does it matter? These are details that we can get caught up in. I did a quick count of the things that I have on my computer. And this will represent number 112. But on my computer, I have 111 Sunday school classes or exhortations. I think it's 49 exhortations and 62 Sunday school classes. And what does that mean? Now, by the way, that's only a small representation. There's a lot more that I used to have on paper, and I don't know what I did with them. But what does that mean? That means I've stood here at least 111 times and tried to explain something. Tried to take some detail from this book and bring it out to you. Given you my interpretation of what it means, of what something says, or try to teach you what I believe. A lot of detail, 111 times, each one roughly, you know, any, let's say we're, let's average them out at 45, because Sunday school is usually about an hour, it talks about half an hour. That's a lot of time. And then earlier today, in our first reading, it was about John the Baptist. And it says that he taught and many other things he preached unto the people. So he exhorted them on many things. So really, there's a lot of detail. And if we look at it, if you look at John, the book of John, the last verse of the book of John, John 21:25. And there are also many other things which Jesus did, the which, if they should be written, every one, I suppose the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. Essentially, there's a lot of information in this book. The first three things on this, on the screen here, we spend months studying, if not years. We can get focused on these details. We can get stuck in the details. But is that a bad thing? All scriptures are given by inspiration of God. But are some things more important than others? Are some passages in scripture more important? All scriptures should be studied. But are there things that we should focus on? I mean, do we really, you know, shouldn't we focus on the fruits of the Spirit rather than Judges 19, which is all about the Levite chopping up his concubine? Shouldn't we be studying the fruits of the Spirit? Why are these other, you know, should we be studying these negative things? Consider this. The early churches only had the Old Testament. They had the Torah. They had the law. They had the histories. This is what they studied. This is how they learn. Jesus quoted from the Old Testament because there was no New Testament to quote from. Until Paul wrote to the Galatians, we had no idea. We'd never heard of the fruits of the Spirit. So the thing that I look at when we're looking at the scriptures, the answer to the first question, are there some parts that are more important than others? Well, the answer is no. All scripture is given by inspiration. All scripture is profitable. And when we're studying, though, some of the things jump out to us. We need to study all of it because otherwise we might miss something. Salvation is through grace. Ephesians 2. For by grace, Ephesians 2:8. For by grace are ye saved through faith, that is not of yourselves, it's the gift of God. When you look at all these things, and we begin to see things, and it certainly looks very complex. You know, just, you know what, I never haven't done this count yet for a very long time, but if you look in my Bible, if I look at my Bible, that's interesting. There's a, well, there's, they restart the numbering when you go to, from the Old Testament to the New Testament. But there's over 1,000 pages in the Old Testament. Or there's close to, actually not quite 1,000 pages. There's a couple hundred pages in the New Testament. So a fairly extensive book, fairly big book, lots of details. But as we dig into these things, something can happen. Something can creep in. We see Ephesians 2. There's nothing that we can do. It's nothing that, it's only God's grace. And you see many passages about Jesus' return and the judgment. And we can live in fear of that judgment. We begin to wonder what it means. Passages we look at in 1 Corinthians, whenever we, there in Corinthians for the memorial service, says, let a man examine himself. For a long time, I didn't really understand what that meant. I realized that, yes, it was people. It was a warning to the people who were there because they were just coming to eat and drink and celebrate and party. They weren't there for the right reason. But we can get caught up in many of these details. If we sit in judgment, if we fear judgment, do we beat ourselves up for not being good enough? That would lead us to fear of judgment. And if we do, and I'm sure, you know what, I can pretty much say that, yes, we have all done so. And we'll likely do it again. We'll think we're not good enough. And when we do this, though, I think we miss the point. Come back to that in a bit. I'm going to jump over to our reading for this morning. In Psalm 34. This is a passage that I've underlined many verses in. And I'm going to read through them quickly. I think you'll understand why I have underline these verses. But these verses are key to me in Psalm 34. And they call things out in Psalm 34. So verse 3. Magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. It's an invitation. This is a psalm that David written after being delivered, after he was delivered from his enemies. And if you really want to look at that, you can look at 1 Samuel 21, but I'm not going to do that today. But this psalm was written about his enemies, about escaping from his enemies. And it was David escaping, not the nation. David personally escaping. And verse 3, oh, magnify the Lord with me. It's an invitation to the people to come together to magnify God. Verse 4, I sought the Lord and he heard me. He delivered me from all my fears. Delivered me from all my fears. David no longer had to live in fear. Verse 7, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. The angels wield the power of God. God sends them to do his work. I could have the number wrong, but I remember when the people sinned and they had the, or when David did this, David did the census. One angel was 30,000, slaves flew 30,000, I believe it was. I could have that wrong. I could have the number wrong, but it's close enough to give you the point that David is telling us that God has his angel round about them that fear him. How powerful is that? God sends his angels to protect us. Verse 15, I almost put this item as the subject, and if you looked at my very first slide, it actually had this verse listed. Verse 15, the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. God is watching over us, and we'll listen when we need his help. His eyes are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. The great creator, sustainer of life, is watching and listening for us. I've often said that we need to be listening and looking for God. But here we are told God is looking for us. Verse 17, the righteous cry, the Lord heareth and delivereth them out of their troubles. In verse 22, the Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none that trust in him shall be desolate. This psalm gives us assurance. This psalm shows us the assurances that we can have in God. It shows the love that God has for us. God will deliver us. So thinking back, we're not good enough. Fear of the judgment. God will deliver us. Request is simple. We fall short. We cannot be perfect. The 630, we all sin. The 613 commandments of the Mosaic Law cannot help, cannot save us. So what does God want us to do? How can we show our love to God and desire to be righteous? How can we, is there anything we can do? Look back at Luke chapter 3. And if you look back at Luke chapter 3, and I want to look at verse 18 again. It's the last one in our first reading from this morning. And many other things. Many other things is exhortation preached he unto the people. This is what talking about John the Baptist. Verse 18 does something. It calls out his teachings. There's a lot of stuff that he said that isn't worth mentioning. It wasn't worth recording. So if we look at things, you know, in verse 18, it really calls out what we see. in verses 11 through 14. These were things that were important enough to be written down. The other things, no. But look at the message. It's just simple. It is so simple. The request is so simple. Give if you can. Give to others if you can. If you have two coats, give one. If you have two coats, give one to someone who's needy. If you have excess food and meat, give it to them. It doesn't say, you know, many of the believers did sell everything they had and walk with the apostles. It doesn't say that we have to. It's because we need to give. We need to look after other people. Be honest. Don't steal. That's what they told the publicans. Be honest. Don't take more than you need. The tax collectors, don't take more than you need. And look what the soldiers. Don't be violent. Don't lie. Don't bear false witness. Be happy with what you have. This is what John taught the people. This was the culmination of the message. John taught Jesus is coming. John taught, give to others, be honest. Don't be violent or lie. Be happy with what you have. You can boil all the commandments down to two. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your might. And love your neighbor as yourself. This is how you do love your neighbor as yourself. It's simple. It's not hard. We're not climbing the mountain, as was mentioned earlier. We don't have to go up and look for it. It's there. John told the people what they had to do. They did not need to run through fire. They did not need to tame wild beasts. It's very simple. It's also shown in Micah 6. So John tells us the second commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. And Micah 6 tells us how to love the Lord your God. What does the Lord require? But to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. So if we do get stuck in this rut of looking at things and wondering, am I good enough? Do I know enough? Am I strong enough? Do I have enough? You know, what is God going to think? Then look at these things. Teachings of John teach us how to deal with each other. And Micah, how to deal with God. The request is very simple. God, we are saved by grace. We know that God freely and happily wants us to live. He sent his son for that purpose. And in return, he's requested that we use some simple things. And in his love, he'll make up for anything that we lack. Thank you.